If you would, please join me in the appendix portion of the book of Judges for another of the stories that likely took place early on in the period of the Judges. We're going to go to Judges chapter number 19, and there's good reason to believe this is early on because of who the high priest is during this story. Now, chronologically, if you want to get a copy of my chronological companion to the Bible, you can find that on the website. I am of the opinion that the first period of oppression of the Canaanites against the Israelites took place shortly after the death of Joshua, and I put the death of Joshua right around 1392 BC. So that first 8 years of oppression by the Mesopotamian king was about 1391 to 1384. And then God brings the first judge against that guy right around 1384. His name was Othniel. And this leadership of Othniel, the strong leadership of Othniel, brought about a period of about 40 years of peace, meaning there were no external threats coming in to the land of Israel. There was still a lot of turmoil on the inside, but no foreign oppression was taking place. So that would take us up to about 1345 BC. I am convinced that the story we're about to go over took place during the end of that 40-year period of peace. Let's read about the events that led up to the near extinction of the tribe of Benjamin. Judges chapter 19. We begin with the theme phrase of the book of Judges. In those days when there was no king in Israel. Now the rest of the phrase in another place is, and everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. So everybody was making up their own rules, everybody was living by their own standards, and we all understand that's never a good situation. So in those days when there was no king in Israel, a certain Levite was sojourning in the remote parts of the hill country of Ephraim. So you remember that the Levitical tribe had no Levitical tribal region. Each of the Levites was assigned a city or farm near a city in the different tribes around the Promised Land. So this guy is a Levite, and his Levitical city is somewhere in the hill country of Ephraim, perhaps not far from Shiloh, where the tabernacle is located at this time. But then we start seeing the making up of their own rules. Who took to himself a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah? So a concubine is a junior wife or a secondary wife. A concubine has a legal connection to the man, but has limited rights to have children with that man. It depends on the marriage arrangement that has been made. So this guy has apparently multiple wives, which was not God's plan. And he secures this wife from down in Bethlehem. Quite a little ways south of where his home city is. Verse 2, his concubine was unfaithful to him. Now, that's the English Standard Version, and it reflects the modern Hebrew text that translators work with. But it's interesting that the Greek Old Testament, which reflects the Hebrew of its day, which we're talking about going back to the 3rd century BC, It says that the woman became angry with him. It has nothing to do with any type of unfaithfulness. So I would tend to go with what's likely to be the older translation from the Hebrew, which seems to be that they had a falling out between husband and concubine. And so what does she do? She does what often happens when there is a fight between married persons. She went away from him to her father's house at Bethlehem in Judah and was there for some 4 months. So she goes back home to mom and dad, having become angry with her husband. So 4 months go by, and he eventually figures out that he misses her. So verse 3 says, "Then her husband arose and went after her to speak kindly to her and bring her back." So he's going to go down there and sweet talk her into coming back home again. "He had with him his servant and a couple of donkeys, and he brought her, and she brought him into her father's house." So they have a conversation and apparently start working things out. And so she comes and says, "Come back in, see my dad." "When the girl's father saw him, he came with joy to meet him." So apparently he got along well with his father-in-law, and dad was looking forward to getting things patched up. "His father-in-law, the girl's father, made him stay, and he remained with him 3 days. So they ate and they drank and they spent the night there. On the fourth day, they arose early in the morning, and he prepared to go. But the girl's father said to his son-in-law, 'Strengthen your heart with a morsel of bread, and after that you may go.' So the two of them sat and ate and drank together. And the girl's father said to the man, 'Be pleased to spend the night. Let your heart be merry.'" So you can see here, the two guys get along great, which may be one of the reasons he ended up marrying this girl, this woman. "When the man rose up to go, his father-in-law pressed him till he spent the night there again. On the fifth day, he arose early in the morning to depart. The girl's father said, 'Strengthen your heart. Wait until the day declines.' So they ate, both of them. And when the man and his concubine and his servant rose up to depart, his father-in-law, the girl's father, said to him, 'Behold, now the day is waned toward evening. Please spend the night. Behold, the day draws to a close. Lodge here and let your heart be merry. And tomorrow you shall arise early in the morning for your journey and go home.'" So we're talking about probably after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. "The man would not spend the night. So he rose up and departed and arised opposite Yabus," that is Jerusalem. So he leaves Bethlehem sometime after 3 o'clock and travels on the road about 5 miles or so up to where Jerusalem is located to the north. And it's clear he's going to have to spend the night somewhere. So he had with him, the text continues, "a couple of saddled donkeys, and his concubine was with him. When they were near Jebus, the day was nearly over." So now the sun is down there close to the horizon. "And the servant said to his master, 'Come now, let us turn aside to this city of the Jebusites and spend the night in it.'" You know, because you want to be inside a walled city when the sun goes down, because you don't know what dangers might lurk outside of those walls. "So his master said to him, 'We will not turn aside into the city of foreigners.'" Because remember, Jebus is a Canaanite city. It's one of the pockets of Canaanite settlement that remain amongst the Israelis. So he says, "We're not going to turn aside into the city of foreigners who do not belong to the people of Israel. We will pass on to Gibeah." Now, Gibeah is a few more miles to the north, and this is Gibeah where the high priest Phinehas had been from. And it's also where Saul, the first king of the Israelis, will be born in a few more years. "So he said to his young man, 'Come, let us draw near to one of these places and spend the night at Gibeah or at Ramah.'" Now, Ramah is a couple of more miles, I think 3 more miles north of Gibeah. So this guy is really pushing it. Once the sun goes down, you know, there's still light that you could travel by. But eventually, it gets pitch black. And so he's pushing it. And so verse 14, they passed on, went their way, and the sun went down on them near Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin. So they turned aside there to go in and spend the night at Gibeah. And he went in and he sat down in the open square of the city, for no one took them into his house to spend the night. So Gibeah is a walled city. It has a gate system where there is an area on the inside of the gate where they set up market stalls and stuff like that during the day. And at night, it's a place where people can just camp out if no one is offered hospitality to them. So that's what this guy is getting ready to do, is just camp out in the empty market square inside the city gate. Verse 16, behold, an old man was coming from his work in the field at evening. Now, when it says old man here, probably he's older than 50. The man was from the hill country of Ephraim, and he was sojourning in Gibeah. And the men of the place were Benjamites. So let's clear this up very, very clear. They're in Gibeah, which is a Benjamite city. The Levite is from Ephraim, which is the next tribe north from Benjamin's territory. And the guy that he is now about to meet is from the tribe of Ephraim, but for some reason he's working and living in Benjamin at the city of Gibeah. Verse 17, this man lifted up his eyes and saw the traveler in the open square of the city, and the old man said, where are you going? Where have you come from? And he said, we're passing from Bethlehem in Judah to the remotest parts of the hill country of Ephraim from which I come. I went to Bethlehem in Judah, and I'm going to the house of he who is. Now, that's our English Standard Version. It is interesting that the Septuagint, that's the Greek translation of the Hebrew during the 3rd century BC, does not have anything about the Lord here. It says, I'm going back to my house. So I would probably go with the Septuagint at this point, and that he's not mentioning that he's going to Shiloh to the tabernacle. Although his house is probably not too terribly far from Shiloh. But anyway, he says, no one's taken me into his house. We have straw and feed for our donkeys, with bread and wine for me and your female servant, and the young man with your servants. There's no lack of anything. So they get to chatting, and he explains, yeah, I'm a Levite. I live in Ephraim, but I've been at Bethlehem just recently. I'm traveling back home again. You know what? We've got plenty of supplies. We're good. We can sleep here in the square with no problem. Verse 20, the old man said, peace be with you. I will care for your wants. Only do not spend the night in the square. Now, this sounds like other stories that we've heard, where a person living in a town knows that the street is dangerous after dark. And so he doesn't want to leave a fellow Ephraim person, because even though he's a Levite, he's from the tribal region of Ephraim. So they're kind of connected that way. So he says, look, don't sleep in the square. It's dangerous out here. Come home to my place. Verse 21. So he brought him into his house and gave the donkeys feed, and they washed their feet and ate and drank. So they're having a good relationship between the two guys, and they drink, and they're probably drinking more than they should be. Verse 22, as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, worthless fellows, and this is a very strong phrase that's used here, sons of Belial, they are they have a characteristic of being absolutely unworthy of the gift of life from God. That's how bad they are. They're a waste of skin, as some people would say. These guys surrounded the house, beating on the door. And so now you find out why this Ephraimite living in Gibeah says, I don't want you sleeping in the square because it's dangerous around here. Now keep in mind, this is only a generation after Joshua had still been alive and leading the people of Israel faithfully. It's already deteriorated that much culturally. They are acting more like Canaanites in their sinful practices than the people of He Who Is. So they said to the old man, the master of the house, bring out the man who came into your house that we may know him. Now that's a euphemism for sexual activity. So these guys have been playing around with bisexuality and homosexuality, and a new guy has come into town and they're interested in sampling him. Now the man, the master of the house, went out to them and said to them, no, my brothers, do not act so wickedly since this man has come into my house. Do not do this vile thing. So he's like, you don't be doing this. He is my guest, and it would be wrong for you to force him into a sexual relationship just because he's somebody new. And then this guy does something that is absolutely ridiculously sinful. He says, verse 24, behold, here are my virgin daughter and his concubine. Let me bring them out now. Violate them or have sex with them and do with them what seems good to you, but against this man, do not do this outrageous thing. So he offers two women to be used sexually just so he can protect his house guest from being sexually violated. This is sin on so many levels here, and we should not excuse it. It is wrong, and it's a representation of how bad Israeli culture has already deteriorated at this point in their history. Verse 25, but the men would not listen. So the man seized his concubine. So this is the Levite now that's getting into it. He's scared for himself. He's scared that he will be sexually violated. And so he grabs his concubine that he just sweet-talked into coming back to his home with him, and he tosses her out the door, made her go out to them. And so they knew her and abused her all night until morning. So they raped her and used her in unspeakable fashion. And as the dawn began to break, they let her go. So she was still alive at that point after being abused for many hours through the night, gang raped and all of that. This is horrendous. As morning appeared, the woman came and fell at the door of the man's house where her master was. Now, master here, you should think in the sense of husband, because it's a word in the language that represents a marital relationship. And so, until it was light. So she falls down at the doorway, and she apparently dies from all of the abuse. Verse 27, her master rose in the morning when he opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way. Behold, there was his concubine lying at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. So she died with her hands kind of reaching out toward the door. He said to her, get up, let's be going. Because he's like scared, they got to get out of there now. There was no answer because she's dead. And there is no excuse for the man. He is responsible for her death. But look what he does next. He put her on a donkey. That is, put her body on a donkey. The man rose and went away to his home. So he goes back to his house. And when he'd entered his house, he took a knife, and taking hold of his concubine, he divided her limb by limb into 12 pieces and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. So even though it's his own fault, even though he is complicit in her rape and death, he is angry and wants the guys that did it to pay. And he wants to bring the wrath of the tribes of Israel down on these men. Verse 30, all who saw it said, such a thing has never happened or been seen from the day that the people of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, take counsel, and speak. So this is the worst thing that has been reported up to this point in Israeli history, the short time that they've been in the Promised Land. Chapter 20, then all the people of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba. Now, this is a way of describing the full extent of the occupied Promised Land by the Israelis. Dan is the northernmost occupied city. It's up north of the Sea of Galilee at the foot of Mount Hermon. And Beersheba is south, a little less than a day's travel south of Hebron, in the Negev of Judah, in the desert that is between Judah territory and the northern Sinai. Including the land of Gilead, so that's the annexed territories on the east side of the Jordan River and the Sea of Galilee. And the congregation assembled as one man to he who is at Mitzpah. Now, this Mitzpah is just a few miles west and a tiny bit north of Gibeah. So this is a rally point for an army. And they meet there with the purpose of going to war. Verse 2, the chiefs of all the people of all the tribes of Israel presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 men on foot that drew the sword. Now, that seems to represent a decline in population. Remember that they kept a militia. They didn't have standing armies. The number of adult men of fighting ability that came out of Egypt and entered into the Promised Land was over 600,000. And so now we see 400,000 of them show up for the rally cry. Now the people of Benjamin heard that the people of Israel had gone up to Mitzpah. Since it's only just a few miles away, that's not surprising. The people of Israel said, tell us how this evil happened. And the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, I came to Gibeah that belongs to Benjamin, I and my concubine, to spend the night. And the leaders of Gibeah rose up against me and surrounded the house against me by night. They meant to kill me, and they violated my concubine, and she is dead. Now, he has left out his complicity in this, hasn't he? He's totally left out the fact that he threw her out of the house to be ravaged by this horrible crowd. Verse 6, so I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, sent her throughout all the country of the inheritance of Israel, for they had committed abomination and outrage in Israel. Behold, you people of Israel, all of you, give your advice and counsel here. And so all the people arose as one man, saying, none of us will go to his tent, none of us will return to his house. But now this is what we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot, and we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel. So since we're talking about 400,000 of them, that would be about 40,000. And 100 of 1,000 and 1,000 of 10,000 to bring provisions for the people. that when they come, they may repay Gibeah of Benjamin for all the outrage that they've committed in Israel. And so all the men of Israel gathered against the city, united as one man. So there is this outrage against a murder and a rape that had been carried out inside the city of Gibeon in Benjamin. And they want to punish the people responsible. Verse 12, the tribes of Israel sent men throughout all the tribe of Benjamin saying, what evil is this that has taken place among you? Now therefore, give up the men, the worthless fellows in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and purge evil from Israel. So they start out by saying, if you turn over to us the guys responsible for this, we will execute them and get this thing over with. Text continues, but the Benjamites would not listen to the voice of their brothers, the people of Israel. So the Benjamites are like, no, they're Benjamites. We will defend them against your outrageous claims. And so we've got two sides completely intransigent. They will not move from their position that they are the ones being wronged here. So the people of Benjamin came together out of the cities of Gibeah to go up to battle against the people of Israel. And the people of Benjamin mustered out of their cities on that day 26,000 men. And they drew the sword besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who mustered 700 chosen men. Among these were 700 chosen men who were left-handed. Each one could sling a stone at a hair and not miss. So a lot of left-handedness in the tribe of Benjamin, apparently. But they're very accurate with their slinging. And the men of Israel, apart from Benjamin, mustered 400,000 men who drew the sword. All these were men of war. So if it were just left to the numbers, Benjamin is about to get trounced. But that is not how it plays out. I'll see you tomorrow.